The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined in the studio today by Craig Burley. We'll kick things off at Wembley, and what a second half it turned out to be. 0-0 going into the break, but really came to life after the break. Germany taking a 2-0 lead. That would kind of spark England into life as they would make it 3-2, but then a late Pope error would gift Germany the equaliser as it would finish 3-3. Let's just take a look at how the papers in the UK sum this up. Thrills and spills, talking about, of course, the late error there from Pope. Ecstasy and agony. Pope throws it all away. Heroes and villains. As it finishes 3-3, let's welcome in, shall we, Nader Manua. Arjun Tutt is outside Wembley. What could possibly go wrong there? And Julien Heron joins us as well before we go to the boys. Craig, how do you sum it up?
I mean, six goals, you can't complain. It was Nations League game, obviously, replaced the friendlies. The way I would sum it up is confirmation, if needed, that neither of these two teams are going to win the World Cup.
Right.
They're just not. Germany 1-1 in six. England, no wins in six now, albeit a great comeback. But I've continually said it about England. They react to what's happening in front of them. They don't start, as a generalisation, they don't start utilising their own talents, particularly in the forward third, until they have to. And I thought for long parts, even though Sterling had the two best chances in the first half, I thought Germany were the more fluid side. Germany bossed the possession, particularly with Gundogan and Kimmich in there. They themselves, particularly early on, they lack a real goal threat up there. Obviously, Thomas Müller was on the bench. Kai Havertz got a great two goals, particularly the one from outside the box, but he's not a natural goal scorer. And so they do look like that threat, but they were the better side for a long period. And England to be outbossed at Wembley by not a vintage German team by a long stretch until they went 2-0 down and they made the changes, it is not an ideal picture for me. Yet whenever you go on social media...
Don't go on social media, Craig.
Not talking about punters. I'm talking about some of the ex-players, some of the journalists. Why is Gareth Southgate getting stick? Why is this not great? You have to look a bit deeper. You can't keep making the substitutions. I mean, if I'm a manager and I... Okay, this game's not really going to matter in the big scheme of things. It is a warm-up for the World Cup. However, if I'm picking a player who's out of form, who's out of team, who's short in match practice, and he makes two mistakes that cost two goals, certainly one goal for sure, and Harry Maguire, how is that a good decision?
Yeah.
How can I pat myself on the back and say, wow, you know, we got that right? Because I don't think he did.
But there's a real loyalty there, it seems, Nathan, from Gareth Southgate, talking about the fact, even after the game, that Maguire's done a lot of things right over the last two matches, suggesting that he isn't going to change his mind.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think it's a very brave call for him because it seems like the whole nation is asking for him not to play. But I think in Southgate, you see the fact he's been so consequential for England, like whether we like this team or we don't, making it to a World Cup semi-final, making it to European Championship final, you know, these are things that they deserve credit for. And he has been a part of that. But it's just a shame because you watch the way that he plays and he seems like he's all right, but then he makes those mistakes. And when you think about, so playing at the highest level, playing at the World Cup with England's ambitions of potentially making it to the final and winning that, you can't make mistakes against sides who can punish you in the same way that Germany did today. And as Craig said, this German side, it's not as if they're, you know, they've won six games in a row or anything like this. This is a side who looked better than England for most of the game, but still, in the same breath, it's not like they're far ahead of where England are themselves. But he seems like he's got a big call in his hands, firstly, to put him in the squad, and then it's a big call to put him in for that very first game at the World Cup, because there's almost an expectation now from the fans that he shouldn't play. And I think for him, if he is going to play, there's going to be so much pressure on him. And unfortunately, I'm getting this sort of sense within English football that they're at the point whereby they're expecting everything to go wrong now. And it's going to be because of this person, because of that person. And, you know, to talk about the newspaper headlines, before the game, everyone was saying Southgate's in trouble. then those first two goals go in, it's Maguire's in trouble, and now Nick Pope makes a mistake and now he gets all the blame. You know, it's just passing on the book from one person to the next. So good luck to them. Obviously, this game itself, it didn't mean anything in the grand scheme of it because England already down. Germany weren't going to finish top with the group, I don't think. But the fact is, it meant something come the end of it. And I think to see that sort of level of passion coming from the players in that final 15, 20 minutes and for the 70,000 fans, I think it made for a good spectacle in a game that in the grand scheme of things didn't matter at all.
Archie, of course, you were in amongst those 70,000 fans. What was their reaction to Maguire over the 90 minutes?
Funnily enough, Dan, there was a moment in the first half where the England fans started singing about Harry Maguire's drinking abilities and the size of his head, all in a very complimentary fashion. So I thought, is this potentially a moment where the tide changes for him after all the stick that he's had? And then the crowd went pretty quiet after both of those Germany goals. And in fact, I even saw streams of people leaving the stadium as if we've had enough, we know exactly what's coming here. This is with 23 minutes to go in the game. But when England scored one, you already saw and felt the crowd starting to move more with the team. And there were limbs everywhere after the second, and to be honest, the third goal, even if it was a penalty. So it was exactly the kind of night that I think England needed to get, or Gareth Southgate needed even, to get the fans back on side. And the Germany fans were having their fun at 2-0 up, singing "Football's Coming Home," not for the first time that they've done that here in this stadium. So as you can imagine, they got quite a bit back from the England fans when England went 3-2 up later.
Jules, England are so weird. We saw that in the final, didn't they? They go 1-0 up, they don't know what to do with themselves. They go 2-0 down today, and all of a sudden they're like, all right, come on, let's go for it. It's like they got the shackles off. Why can't they just start the game like that?
I don't think they've got a clue on what to do tactically because it doesn't come from the manager. And again, we go back to Southgate limits. And today, the substitutions were the key, really, Mount and Saka, because they shook everything up, which was the right thing to do. But it was a no-brainer. Things were so bad for England. Sterling missed that big chance in the first half. But there was nothing in the game, really. And I think he had to do something. He had to change. And I guess Mount and Saka, especially, Saka should have started. There's no way Bukayo Saka cannot start, considering the form that he's had with Arsenal. When you think about it, the first game you play left wing back, which, I mean, yeah, okay, you played as a left back when you were 17 for Arsenal, but this is not your position. And then the second game, you're on the bench. It didn't make any sense at all. So, of course, he comes on. He's got all that energy that he should have brought from the start because he should have started. Mount has a lot of things to prove, like Craig said, really average start of the season with Chelsea. This is his chance. And then suddenly they bring so much energy that England didn't really have before, that it changes the dynamic. I think Germany was so comfortable that suddenly there's a big change, especially on that right-hand side where, let's be honest, Ram is having quite a torrid time in domestic football as well, so with the national team too. So, and then Goosen's the same. So it was the right thing to do. But before that, I don't think they had much of an idea what to do with the ball. And again, we saw how average they were with the ball, apart from that one or two counter attacks in the first half.
I mean, Germany almost 60% possession at Wembley. It's not the most important thing. We know under Southgate they are effectively a counter attacking side, but you can't continue to let yourself be bossed like that. I mean, you maybe get away with it against weaker teams. I've said Germany is not the strongest. One of the answers, I think, to the questions about why are England not letting their hair down a little bit more is they're worried about what's behind them. And what's behind them is an Achilles heel. It's an Achilles heel in the centre-half position. It's now an Achilles heel in the full-back position with injuries and form. And if anything happens to Pickford, it's going to be, and you don't have to be Pickford's biggest fan, but it's going to be potentially a headache in that position as well. So I think there is a bit of fear within England's play about, you know, you look at Man City, for example. They go out, they'll leave themselves open, and they'll get caught now and again. But they generally back themselves. England are scared to back themselves until the chips are down. But going back to the Maguire situation, you know my feelings on it about not playing regular at a club and playing international football. I've seen it firsthand with teammates of mine. Go back to the ludicrous decision Maurizio Pochettino made in the Champions League final 2 or 3 years ago, when he decided, whether he was harangued into it by ownership or fans or media, he decided that Harry Kane on one leg was going to start in the Champions League final. And Harry Kane couldn't raise a gallop. Now, I'm a huge fan of Harry Kane. He's back playing some of the best football of his career. But he'd been out of the game with a wonky ankle for 3 months, give or take. And no football. No football. And he thought he could throw him into the Champions League final. And it was, wasn't the only reason, but it was like playing with 10 men. And if you go to a World Cup, and the pressurised situation of a World Cup, not the Nations League, even though it's at Wembley, but a World Cup where the whole nation's watching this one, the pressure's on Southgate, you know the pressure's on you as a player, if Maguire doesn't play before then, and it looks like he won't, then every little mistake, every bad result, every little minute detail could cost Southgate a qualification to the knockout stages, even though they're the favourites in that group. And that is going to leave him absolutely hung out to dry. I think more so than not playing Southgate, not playing Maguire and it goes wrong, I think he's leaving himself more open if he plays him,
right,
to be honest with you. Because if he doesn't play him and juggles things around and they struggle a bit, he can just turn around and say, I couldn't play the guy.
Right.
He's just not played enough first-team football to step into a World Cup arena.
Who do you play, Nadim, at the back?
Wow, that's a really good question. I think it would depend on the system he's trying to go for. But with the Maguire side of things, you know, at this moment in time, it doesn't feel essential that he should play him, because as Craig's saying there, you know, there's a feeling about being a player and playing week in, week out. And as well as that, if you're representing your country, you're likely playing really well as well. So whatever the challenge would be when you go with the international team, you're in a good moment. Most of the players around you are in a good moment. The people you play against, they're in a good moment. So anybody who doesn't have as much confidence, you know, they stick out like a sore thumb. And in some ways, maybe they'll play on that. Like even, you know, a little side thing in relation to that. Today, you could see that, say, Pope was nowhere near as good as Ter Stegen was with the ball at his feet. So Germany wanted to put more pressure on Pope, because they knew if it went to him, he's going to kick it or it's going to take too long. You know, and these little details can make such a big difference when quality is as high as it is. So I think for Maguire going to the World Cup, yes, he could go. And, you know, we've seen the history that he's had in terms of, you know, the success he's brought for England. But there's a lot of talk. Why not Tomori? You know, Eric Dier's playing particularly well now. If they're going to be playing at three at the back, you know, Kyle Walker's an option. John Stones, if he's fit, is an option. You know, they're even Connor Cody's doing well for Everton right now. So there are other people that were in there, and I suppose with Southgate, it's the balance of experience versus, you know, real match sharpness. And if he believes he can find a way through with his experience, then yeah, fair enough. But, you know, there's always going to be a nagging doubt in the back of your mind. Is he ready for this moment? Is he ready? Because as we saw for the first goal today, for the penalty, you know, it's little things like that. Understanding that the forward is there waiting to pick up the ball. You know, so it's not the right time to make that pass. And then before you know it, some of the best players in the world are running straight at you. And obviously, it wasn't his best moment in terms of defending, but just imagine that maybe 4, 5, 6 times over at the World Cup if the team ends up doing well.
Just before we go to the boys, you've got a left wing back as well who's not playing. Did okay tonight, actually, Shaw, but you know that's another scenario when he gets to a World Cup if he plays. But Southgate sort of contradicts himself and saying that, you know, I'm picking players on form and I'm doing this. Well, he's just... I mean, he's picking the team squad because it's his choice to do so, but clearly Maguire is not in form. And for me, and Jules was talking about patterns of play, I saw more patterns of play from Germany, particularly in the middle of the park and come and getting it from the back and then getting it wide and switching play. England, for me, and they're a decent side, England are about moments, about an axis of Sterling and Kane, you know, these little magic moments that come off of them where Sterling will do something, he'll play a little 1-2, or Kane will drop off and he'll reverse a great ball in behind. England are about these moments, and maybe that's the way that Southgate wants it, and maybe that's what's brought them relative success up to this point, getting to finals, is just soaking up the pressure and waiting on Kane coming short and spraying a ball, or waiting on Sterling running in behind, or Foden, who was quiet for most of the game, doing something, or Bellingham making a run from the middle of the park, and hoping that they can stay as a back five and be solid. Maybe that's what he sees is their avenue to getting a decent or successful World Cup. I just see England as a little bit more than that. Particularly when you see all the other nations in Europe, and I think if I was a South American nation, i.e. Argentina, Brazil, I would feel good about what I've seen in Europe.
Yeah. Were you sat next to Alexander-Arnold today, Archie?
Why?
Well, obviously, he was just completely... He wasn't even included in the 23, was he? He was in the stands.
No.
a lot of people looking at this England side and looking at the lack of cutting edge and excitement and wondering what it is that Gareth Southgate has against the Liverpool defender.
Well, he does have quite a few other good right-backs in his squad. You can understand it from that point of view. I know that Germany would love one, if not two of them, when you look at the balance of their squad as well. And there was a question to Gareth Southgate about whether Marcus Rashford might get a call-up, given the form that he's come back into under Erik ten Hag. So I think that's certainly an issue. For Germany, I think we have to mention Jamal Musiala, Dan, not just for the way that he embarrassed Harry Maguire, but also for the second goal. Hansi Flick, the Germany coach, was pointing out how well he did to win the ball. There were quite a few occasions where Musiala showed his ability against the ball tonight, which I don't think is necessarily where we see him at his best or what he's praised for the most. But one downside for Germany is at centre-back, they've got a problem in Nico Schlotterbeck, who's done very well at Dortmund this season. He saw how willingly he was lunging in all over the park before giving away that penalty on club teammate Jude Bellingham, as if Dortmund don't have enough injury problems themselves right now, maybe getting injured by one of his own players. So Schlotterbeck, that was the third penalty he's given away in his five caps for Germany, which is an exceptionally high record. I think that Antonio Rudiger will probably be paired with Nicolas Zula as the first choice centre-back pairing for the start of the World Cup. Also, that Germany team had real problems breaking England down in the first half. And the one thing I'd say about England is, sure, they are not the most adventurous going forward necessarily, but I think that maybe at international football level, when you don't have that much time, the sort of realism that they play with, that sure, we aren't going to be able to attain this kind of club level of football, it might actually pay off in a tournament. You saw it with France at the 2018 World Cup. They didn't necessarily play the most all-out attacking football, but under Didier Deschamps, they played a functional way of playing, and it got them the trophy.
Just going back to the Alexander-Arnold point, because obviously it's been a big discussion, hasn't it, Jules, in England, about whether or not he should feature. What's the temperature of the general public there?
I think there's a lot of, there's a lot of people who are quite baffled by the fact that he can't even make the bench in these squads and be an option for Southgate. If Southgate doesn't want to start him because you prefer Reece James as a more defensive player, if you want, because this is what Southgate is as well. He's a very conservative, defensive-minded coach. That's his call. He prefers James because James is more solid defensively than Alexander-Arnold. Maybe. But not to even have him on the bench, to be able to bring on for more creativity, for just a more attacking mindset at some point for his own team. I think that sums it all up well. This is the problem. This is part of the problem. Not just for Alexander-Arnold, but in general for Southgate with his team and with his squads. And I think it would be really sad if Trent Alexander-Arnold was not going to the World Cup. And right now, let's be honest, unless there's an injury to either Trippier, Walker or James, he's not going to go, which, again, I really struggle to understand.
Ironically, for Alexander-Arnold, with all the discussion just primarily been about his defensive capabilities or lack of them, is that if you play a back three and you have wing backs, there is less, not no responsibility, but less responsibility
right
to defend, because you've got a right-sided centre back on that side who's a little bit wider than a normal centre half would be. And so you generally don't have to tuck in as much, which is a big part of Alexander Arnold's problem. His positional play is poor. His awareness of what around him at times is poor. But if you have a back three, then it is less of an issue to worry about because you've got the three centre-backs. Now, understandably, as Jules was saying, Reece James, even in that position, seems preferred because he's got a little bit more of both, isn't he? I mean, he's certainly not got the attacking capabilities, although he's good, but he's certainly stronger defensively. I mean, Reece James himself could play right-sided centre-back, has done before, and it is an option. But I agree with Jules, to not have somebody of his talent who... You could bring him off the bench for set pieces, for as a wide player even, with a fullback behind him, and you just say, I want you to get it out there, I want you to get balls in the box for Harry Kane. He's just an option all round. I understand there are worries about him making mistakes at the back, but the way Southgate's playing, and I don't think that will change, because Eric Dier's playing in a three at Tottenham, and it looks like he'll be the middle guy, the experienced guy in there. He's not going to play in a two, so it looks like he'll go that way. There's even more reason to say, listen, we could maybe go with Alexander-Arnold, we'll certainly have him on the bench because we've got a bit more cover. But I don't think he will.
No.
I think he's made his mind up, and I think Alexander-Arnold might not even make, for somebody so talented, might not even make the plane to Qatar.
And that, given what we've seen between the relationship between Southgate and Alexander-Arnold, that seems a fair statement, Nathan.
Yeah, it certainly does. It certainly does. And I think when we look at Alexander-Arnold, for me, when he's at his absolute best, although he's part of that Liverpool system, you can see him play with a bit more freedom. You could see him popping up maybe something more centrally. Sometimes he goes on overlap. Sometimes he's coming short. He's looking for those long passes, those direct passes, those good balls in, those quick free kicks. And that stuff there is probably the antithesis of what Southgate wants from his team. You know how they're going to be playing, whether you like it or you don't. This is it. It's three at the back. It's going to be those two midfielders. They're going to be the two wing backs and going to be those three up front trying to stretch the game. That's who they are. And he must be doing something in training consistently over the years, which maybe Southgate just doesn't like and he's not having. And I think that sort of maverick nature, that makes some people love a player. But then, unfortunately, in this instance here, the other side of it is that Southgate maybe doesn't. And at the end of the day, you know, I've been seeing the news headlines recently. I saw Frank was talking about his defensive liabilities. Mm-hmm. And then Rio Ferdinand said he shouldn't be allowed to do that. So, you know, Frank Leboeuf, World Cup winner, being told by Rio Ferdinand to not talk about Alexander Arnold's defending, me as former QPR captain, all I will say is puts great balls into the box, and defensively I cannot comment because obviously I've not defended enough to know what to say to him at all.
You've never man-marked Ronaldo in a World Cup final.
The world's gone mad. Let me say one thing about Hansi Flick here. I was a little surprised. Bearing in mind Leroy Sané has been arguably having, well, I wouldn't say the best.
No, but he's looked good, hasn't he?
But he's looked like the old Sané again, start of the season, right? He's looked really sharp, really quick, end product, running at players. And yet he has Hoffman on that side, the German right-hand side. When he's got Leroy Sané on the other side, or floating around a little bit, I would have had him out there, because you've got the left side, you've got Maguire and you've got Shaw, and I'm, for the sake of repeating myself, everybody in the world knows, they're not playing.
Yeah.
They're not playing and they lack sharpness. I would have had Sané out there and I've been saying, let's isolate those two, let's stick the ball out to them, let's switch it out to them, isolate them and let Sané go at Shaw and Maguire. But they left Hoffman out there, didn't do a lot wrong, didn't do a lot right, got taken off. I just didn't understand that's my cynical side. When you've got to focus on weak points. Like the boys were saying earlier, if it's Nick Pope and he's not good with the ball at his feet, try and play in that. If it's Harry Maguire and Luke Shaw lacking game time, you've got to play in that. That's what you've got to do as a coach. And to not have one of German's most informed, fastest, speediest forwards against two guys that are not playing was a bit of a strange one for me.
Archie, who's going further in Qatar? Germany or England?
Germany. I think that ultimately they're in a better position than England right now, as Craig said, and I trust them to do more with the squad that they have at their disposal. They are that little bit more adventurous than England, and I think that particularly at goalkeeper, that is a key position where England don't necessarily have the strength in depth. Not obviously that you're going to play three goalkeepers in a World Cup, of course not. But I think that mistake from Pope tonight, Pickford, I don't always find particularly convincing. I think that's definitely a worry for Gareth Southgate. I think that Germany do have their problems, particularly when it comes to opening up teams. I think Germany and England will go similar distances in the tournament. But I just fancy Germany to just have that little bit more of an edge right now under Hansi Flick. Albeit, I do admire there's certain qualities about the way that England play with a bit more instinct and a bit more joie de vivre when they're in situations like Harry Kane, for example, in the first half. He takes a first-time shot. And Germany, they sometimes overthink it. They want to do one move too many. They're playing it back in. You could see it the way that Timo Werner was playing at certain moments. I think Germany need more of that. And I think, to be honest, England could probably benefit from a little bit more structure and a little bit more organisation in their combination play going forward. That's what Germany have done, but they're going to have to break down deep lying teams, and Japan is not going to be an easy first game for them.
Do German fans expect them to win it all?
every time, Dan, they used to say that they were a Turniermannschaft, which means that they are a tournament team, except that whole reputation has been slaughtered by the last two tournaments. One thing that I can tell you that they say about English players, namely English goalkeepers, as I found out when playing football myself over there, is that if you make a mistake as a goalkeeper, which of course has never happened to me in five-a-side, they laugh and they say, ha ha, English are Torhüter, English goalkeepers, typical. So back in Germany, they would have found what happened tonight to Nick Pope very amusing indeed. To round back to your question, I would say, like, Germany are expected to get to the semi-finals. Those are the expectations on Hansi Flick, at least from the German FA as well.
Archie, thank you very much.
You're putting your money on England at that price?
No, you wouldn't touch England at all as second favourites ahead of the likes of Argentina. It's incredible.
Ahead of Argentina.
You wouldn't go anywhere near them, would you? No.
Not when you look at that. Not when you look at that back line. No.
No.
Can't.
No, not at all. Meanwhile, let's just take a look at what else happened. Oh, sorry. Bayern Munich taking on Bayer Leverkusen in the Bundesliga. That game 2:30 Eastern on ESPN Plus. Of course, domestic football, of course, returns. Right then, Hungary taking on Italy. And so, who would win the Nations League group? Hungary, of course, been flying so far in their campaign. Opportunity here in the fifth minute. But Salazar with the clearance to keep it at 0-0.
Ooh.
20 minutes later, Raspadori gives Italy the lead.
Old dodgy back pass. Keeper comes out, does well just to mop it up initially, and then that's a good finish actually. Nice couple of touches.
And then into the second half, it's 2-0. DeMarco with the tap-in.
Yep, get into the back post, get your just rewards.
As Gab tweeted, who needs the World Cup when you're in the final four of the Nations League? That's exactly where Italy find themselves after that victory today.
Very prestigious.
Very much so.
Prestigious.
Meanwhile, it's not been a good week for Barcelona, has it? In the sense that a lot of their players have picked up knocks. The worst one, obviously, Araujo is out for 3 months. He's going to have an operation on his thigh, meaning he's out, of course, for the rest of the year, including the World Cup. Question marks then over the likes of Memphis Depay and Koundé. Remember, El Clásico is October the 16th. They are very much in a race to get fit for that tie. They will not feature this weekend as La Liga returns. Barcelona away against Mallorca. That one of 10 matches live and exclusive on ESPN+.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Meanwhile, the Premier League is back with a bang this week, and it all starts with Arsenal against Tottenham in the North London derby. The reason we bring this up, because Jules and Nadim, I don't believe you're on for the rest of the week, so we may as well just get your thoughts going into this tie. Jules, as it stands, your boys are evens. Are you comfortable with a nice Arsenal win?
I don't think it'd be easy, but I think they're looking really good so far this season. The game against United, which is the only defeat that they've suffered, showed some limits, certainly at some point, maybe a bit of naivety. We discussed this on the night of that game actually. But I think from pretty much everything else, and we don't need to know who they beat or where those teams are, because for example, I think if you look at the average position of the team that they beat so far, is still higher than what City or Spurs have faced so far as well this season. So they beat what was in front of them. They did really well. They played so well with the ball, without the ball, defensively, offensively. They clearly, Arteta has that squad and that team where he wants them to be. There's still a few question marks over the fitness of Tierney and Zinchenko and Partey, those kind of boys. But overall, it's been a very, very positive start of the season. So they go into this game with huge confidence and momentum, for sure.
Nadim, is that you humming? Obviously, we've lost Nathan's audio at the moment. Yeah. hence the technical
He's
issues.
Back.
There we have.
We got you.
We got you.
Okay, cool. So that was a very good answer. I don't know why I was humming. I apologise. It should be such a good game this weekend, because this Arsenal, like, I watched them against Brentford, I think it was last week, and I'm watching it thinking, well, this is that sort of banana skin game, banana peel game for them, where, you know, they'll slip up, they'll make a mistake. And Brentford kind of took it to them early doors in that game. But Arsenal showed a lot of character, a lot of footballing character, and they stuck with the plan. They were playing, they were moving the ball well. And in the end, it was a comfortable win in a place which is, you know, inevitably quite tricky for a lot of sides. And I thought, well, it's interesting that we're talking about, you know, City being favourites for the league title, all this. Liverpool might come back in, but it's Arsenal that are top. And then to give Spurs credit as well, they've got the same record as City. So it's good to see that, you know, even at this early stage of the season, some teams are still very much along for the ride. And I like what Arsenal are doing this year. And I think going into this game, them being favourites to a team who, you know, this is the best Spurs have been for such a long time, it makes for a very good footballing game. And I guess the only difference for me is that although Spurs have got all those results, some of those performances haven't necessarily matched what we sort of expected for them. But then you then say, well, they're finding ways to win games. And, you know, people can be critical about Arsenal in terms of the teams that they've beaten. But I think there's this thing about perception within football that, you know, you only do well if you beat the teams who are in and around you. But if you beat the teams in the bottom 10 twice over, that's 60 points. Let's just make it clear. If you want to be successful, you have to accrue those big points, because you know those other teams are going to be doing it. City traditionally do it. Liverpool do it. And that's one of the reasons why they end up at the top. So it makes for a great occasion. Should be a great game. And I suppose those odds of evens for Arsenal, you know, they're currently the best team in England. So why not?
Do you want to talk about this? You're going to be here later this week, so you don't have to say anything.
Have we got much to talk about this week?
Well,
to be fair, it's a good early third and fourth playoff place, isn't it? Game.
Right.
About right, isn't it?
I don't know. Where are Liverpool in that conversation?
That's not a criticism, because, you know, I do agree Arsenal have made pretty easy work of games, I think, last year they would have maybe not have. And I'm really looking forward to how Jesus' performance again, the way he just ruffles up defenders, and how Arsenal have moved the ball and got it up to him and his movement. I think if Zinchenko and Tierney are out, that's a huge problem. And I mean, that could tip the scales. I shouldn't be saying that about fullbacks, but they've been so strong in the fullback position, particularly the left side. But I just fancy Arsenal a little bit if everybody's fit, because of the way they've played and they've moved the ball. And Tottenham, I'm not really been surprised, because their manager is quite negative. They just have more firepower to change games. I've said that to you. When it's all going wrong, he can go to the bench. A bit like Southgate did in this game at Wembley against Germany. It was all going wrong, he went to the bench. Conte's able to do that more this season than he was last. But I've really liked what I've seen from Arsenal so far.
So that's the early game on Saturday. Then the late match on Sunday is the Manchester derby. City entertaining United. Let's just take a look at how things stand, shall we? Going into that tie as it stands, City are 5 points clear. Ten Hag side, yeah, United, of course, do have a game in hand after that game against Chelsea was postponed. How are you feeling going into this one, Nadim?
Same as always as a City City TV member. You know, you're always that little bit nervous because for as much as City are great and they win so many games, like, there's always this nagging doubt because Manchester United are one of those teams where sometimes when they play against City, not necessarily last year, they don't necessarily need to play well to get a result. They have this sort of feel, this knack. And when you spent most of your life seeing them, seeing the red side beat the blue side, it does affect you. But, you know, City are overwhelming favourites for the game. And for United, it's a great test for them. I think the win against Arsenal was good for them. But, you know, can they really take the momentum that they've gained to the Etihad? How will they play the game? Will they go and try and press high like maybe they've done at home sometimes? Will they be sitting back? Will Maguire be playing? Will it be this? Can we picture Haaland playing against that Man United back four? How will they try and do it? You know, it's tactically very interesting. But then also, you know, they do have a bit of firepower as well. But you fancy City, everyone fancies City, but, you know, if you want City to win because you maybe perhaps are a blue, it's never really that enjoyable unless it's like 3-4 goals up like it was in the second game last season.
We'll be talking about this game, of course, more in detail throughout the week. Meanwhile, be sure to join us tomorrow because not only will we be looking ahead to the return of those domestic games right across Europe, plenty else to talk about as well because there's a little matter of Portugal against Spain in the Nations League. Portugal looking good, aren't they, so far? Spain, meanwhile, not looking great, and it will be a winner-takes-all tie in Group 2 as to who will make it into the Final Four of the Nations League. Meanwhile, the US are in action tomorrow in Spain. They take on Saudi Arabia, looking to bounce back after that terrible performance against Japan. Of course, lost that game by 2-0.
Whose fault was it? Thomas Tuchel's? I don't know. I've been off for a few days. Whose fault was it? It had to be somebody's fault.
Alexis caught up with Matt Turner in Spain to talk about that defeat against Japan.
I know, of course, the first match was a difficult one. What have you guys done since? Is it one of those that you go through with a fine-tooth comb, or do you just kind of chalk it up to, look, it was a bad day, let's move on?
Yeah, I think a lot of people are really analyzing this performance just because it's getting so close to the time where we're going to be on the world's biggest stage. So I think it is right to comb through it, comb through the fine details, figure out what went wrong. Which we have done over the past few days, but at the same time, you know, sticking together. I don't know how much you've been around the camp, but like, we're all really close, so we're all able to hold each other accountable and like in a positive, good, healthy way, which I think is a huge strength of this team. So obviously, you know, looking forward to tomorrow and our match against Saudi Arabia.
We spoke to Greg after the match and he just said he just wanted more personality.
We want a little more personality in the match. For some reason, I didn't see a lot of personality with our performance tonight.
We need to play with personality. We need to play relaxed. We need to play with intensity. And when we do these things, we're a really good team. But when we don't, we're an average team.
How would you get back to playing with that personality that we know the U.S. has?
I think that's a fair sort of assessment of everything. Sort of what we built our whole anchors on is about our personality, is about our diversity, is about the way that we take on challenges and can always rely on our anchors through tough times. And I don't think we did that. I don't think we coached ourselves enough on the field from a player's side. I think for us, Greg, in the right positions, give us the perfect tactics, whatever, but at the same time we need to take ownership on the field. If things are working great, if they're not working, it's kind of like on us to figure it out, because think about a stadium in the World Cup. How is Greg really going to be able to relay messages to the field when there's tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of screaming fans making a lot of noise?
And as you said, the World Cup now, the days are ticking down, you know, less than 2 months away. What would be success for you? Is it, you know, out to the group stages, quarters, semis, maybe even the final?
Yeah, I'd say it's hard to judge what success would be sometimes. Obviously, from a mindset standpoint, you want to say, yeah, we're in it to win the whole thing. But there also needs to be realistic expectation in order to set your goals properly throughout. So we'll just take it one stage at a time. I think the only way to get through a tournament like this is to take it one game at a time. So getting results in our first two games, setting up that third game to get out of the group, and then from there anything can happen. This is football, this is the World Cup, so that's the beautiful part of the game that we all love.
The ugly part, of course, is Hercules Gomez. He's back with Sebastian Salazar for a special preview looking ahead to the US against Saudi Arabia. Alexis Nunez joins them as well from Spain.
Wow.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
By the way, it's Monday.
It is Monday.
And I'm already out of cliches after that American segment. The clicheometer has gone through the roof. It's a game of two halves. All the cliche.
That is it. Be sure to stay tuned. Extra time.
More cliches.
Good grief. Welcome in then to the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you very much for your tweets. Craig Burley with us here in the studio.
Goalkeeper, Matt Turner, goalkeeper. In the interview, it was on the show.
Yes.
Blah, blah, blah.
Yes.
It's going to be really, there's another one, that's a classic. It's going to be really difficult to get instructions on in big stadiums with lots of people. It's not.
We can't hear. What's going on?
No, it's called the rubber ear.
You just close the ear up. Okay, yeah, that's it. Yeah. Jules is back with us. Nadim, I feel like it's been a long time since you've been on the show. I'm here. You were in Greece at Joe Hart's wedding, was it? Is that right?
No, it wasn't his wedding. No, it was his wife's 40th birthday party. It was a lot of fun. Oh. But either way, I wasn't needed by you guys anyway, so it's fine. I just happened to be on holiday. That's just the way it works.
You're a hobnobbing in Greece.
40th birthday party, just go to the pub.
Hey, it was your birthday, wasn't it?
I believe it was.
Your birthday this weekend?
I spent it at home on my own.
Well,
well, I didn't really. I didn't really. I had three dogs, and I had my best friend, Guinness.
There you are, perfect. Now, very Guinness, nice. It's Guinness, not the Guinness name of the dog.
No, Guinness was, he was chilled out.
Oh, that's good, that's good. What are you now, 53?
Shut up.
First question, are you ever going to answer any questions other than the ones from Dan's burner accounts?
We don't pick them.
Just to confirm, I do not. A lot of people think that I pick the questions and I run ESPN FC social media.
But
I do neither of those.
They certainly don't do that.
No.
But, you like to think you run the show.
No, but I don't pick the questions, do I?
No, but you like to make people think that you run the whole shebang.
Is it the whole ship?
Hook, line,
the whole ship line. Is that right? Is that how it's
I'm
done, is it?
I'm the boss.
Hi, Dan. This is for Naden, please.
Think of that strop you threw the other week.
Very, very
polite. The producer wanted to go somewhere.
Yes, well, there you went in there. It was a silly idea. Manchester United fans have been watching Maguire make those same mistakes for the last 2 years, Naden. Does Maguire just need to accept he is not at an elite level and push for a move to a top 10 team? Varane and Martinez are simply miles ahead.
So should Maguire leave Man United to try and find something worse? Off the top of my head, I don't think that's the way it works. And you know, for like Maguire, it's like little moments. I think there's certain parts of the game where he does well, he does fine. But the errors he's making at the minute are being punished, and everyone can see them, and now everybody's expecting them. And now that compilation tape you can find on YouTube of Maguire mistakes just gets that little bit longer, gets shared that little bit more. But he's a believer. You can't doubt yourself as a player, because from the moment you do, you're lost. There's no room for you in a top 10, top 20 team if you don't think you're good enough. And he's been the captain of the football club when they were successful. He's been played in bigger games than the vast majority of defenders that are in the Premier League at this moment. So. Yeah, he's just going to have to try and play his way through it. I just hope he's selected every so often and then, you know, just find a bit of form, because football and fans, you know, essentially can be so fickle. As soon as things start going the right way for you, everyone start believing you again.
Peter, I know we talked a lot about Maguire on the show, but, you know, it's a sort of night and day scenario with a lot of punters. All of a sudden they think Maguire would struggle in their Sunday league team now.
Right.
You know, they think they could do a better job. Harry Maguire's a very good player. He's not the first player that has been vaunted by several clubs after playing some great football for Leicester City in England and goes on to have a bad time. I mean, at one point, a player we've talked about a lot, Fernando Torres, was the hottest property in European football as a frontman at one point. He was scary. He had everything. He would outpace you, he'd outfight you, he'd outscore you, out the lot. And then at one point, he wasn't. Mm. You know, it was confidence, it was injuries, whatever it was. But when that was not the same for Fernando Torres. There has been so many players that has happened to. The problem is, he's been thrown out into these big arenas with, in the form that he's in, with the confidence that he's got. He's not trying to play badly. He didn't try and make those mistakes for England tonight. He didn't try and give a penalty away. But that's the place he's in his career at the moment, because he's not getting game time. But if a manager keeps throwing you out there, then what are you to do? You either go and hide or you try and get on with it. And as Nedim said, he's trying to play through it. It's not his fault that it just so happens to be Old Trafford and Wembley. It's what sometimes happens to professional players.
Craig, do you think Rashford and Kane will work better than Sterling and Kane? Kane is used to playing with Son, who has a lot of pace and is good one-on-one. Rashford is more similar to Son than Sterling.
I think Sterling and Kane have worked quite well together so far. I mean, Rashford, you know, Harry Kane's always going to drop off and play some wonderful balls in behind for runners. Both Rashford and Sterling are capable of making those runs in behind. I think England so far have worked well with those players. I mentioned it on the show. Those two were kind of the shining light in bad periods of the German game in the first half. Marcus Rashford, if he continues for the next however many weeks it is before the World Cup, if he has a, you know, great game against Man City at the weekend and that continues, it's going to be hard to ignore him.
Right.
It really is. But I can't second guess what Gareth Southgate is going to do. But I don't think, even if Rashford scores 6, 7, 8 goals between now and the World Cup, I don't think he's ousting Sterling. Not in the manager's mind.
Jules, do you think Chelsea should play Kai Havertz at the centre attacking midfield spot instead of one of the front two strikers? It's his natural spot and he looks much more comfortable there for Germany.
That's a good question. I don't know what Graham Potter is going to do. I mean, he obviously didn't start the game against the only game that Potter has managed so far against Salzburg in the Champions League. He came on in the second half and Aubameyang started with Mount and a bit on the right and then Sterling on the left-hand side and the kind of wing-backs, if you want, although it was a bit asymmetrical. But it'd be interesting to see. I still wonder, really, I think like a lot of people, what is Kai Havertz's best position, because he's clearly very, very talented and the goal that he scored tonight shows it. but is he as a false nine with a lot of movement around him where he can drop deeper and can touch a lot of the ball and you basically build your attack around him? Is he better as a second striker with a focal point ahead of him? And again, he can set that focal point up and play around and have two wingers too. I think he needs a lot of movement around him for sure, wherever he plays. But I think it would be down to Graham Potter to work it out. And I think Hansi Flick is struggling a bit with his attacking options for Germany. For example, Werner, Havertz, Müller, who was on the bench tonight. I think for Chelsea, one of the keys of what Graham Potter would be able to do with that team is to work out how best use of his forwards, for sure.
I personally think he'll look better with a second striker or somebody around about him. I think somebody to take the load off him where he can also float around a little bit. Doesn't have to be that kingpin through the middle where everyone has to go through. He can float a little bit wider. He can get turned on the ball, plays little one-twos, and more importantly, get himself in the box. If you watched him at Leverkusen, I don't know how many headed goals he's got at Chelsea, but he seemed to me, every time the ball came in the box at Leverkusen, he was a huge threat.
Right.
And I think if he had somebody up there beside him or close to him, he could work better together. But it's whether, we know Thomas Tuchel didn't want to do that, and I have my doubts that Graham Potter will want to do that as well, which leads to the question, what then is going to be his best position?
All will be revealed.
End of the season, son.
Everything is falling apart for Barcelona, Jules. Why is this happening?
Yeah, I mean, of all the clubs that have lost players in this international break, and there was really quite a lot of injuries. We saw John Stones tonight for England, for example, and Man City. But Barca really have won it because De Jong, Depay, Dembele, Koundé, and Araujo, that's five players, five big players, not just players that you can easily replace. So this is a bad one. I mean, Araujo is the most serious one, the longest one. We expect Koundé to be back in 3 weeks probably. I don't think De Jong is big. I don't think Dembele is big. Depay needs to be assessed as well. But it's the wrong time as well. It's such a bad time with the Champions League, with the Clásico, with the crazy month of, what, the crazy next 6 weeks really, because October is a mental month with all the games that everybody's going to play. So Xavi would have to find alternatives. Who do you play defensively, for example? Who do you play at right back? Who comes in as centre backs? Would you have to play maybe Gerard Piqué, which is the last thing that he probably wanted to do this season? But hey, maybe he would have to play him. So it's really bad for Barcelona.
They'll have to go and pilfer some players again.
Pull another lever.
I have to go and pilfer Martin Braithwaite. Go to Espanyol. They've just sold him there. Go and pilfer him back. We'll get Memphis out. We've got to need another attacking player.
Right, listen to this logic.
Go to Leganés again like they did before.
Listen to this logic.
Cry wolf.
Craig,
what?
If winning the World Cup is the biggest achievement in a player's career, but club football is better, doesn't that mean that the Club World Cup is the biggest trophy ever?
Well, it's the biggest one that would blow away. Club World Cup.
Chelsea World Chat. You really upset those Chelsea fans.
Good.
You said that. Good. Take that.
Who were their teams? It was Chelsea.
I can't remember.
Jules will know. Who were the two teams from the other two continents?
So I think the Copa Libertadores winners were
Palmeiras,
I think.
Yep.
Yeah.
No.
Then I think from Mexico. Yeah, I can't remember who.
Yeah.
But wasn't
it Club America?
They played the team from the. Yeah. From Qatar, I think, or something like that as well. Yeah, it was not the toughest.
Schedule list. Right, hey, okay. Jules, Gab would have known that. Gab would have known, Jules.
Nadim.
Hey, this is what I'm saying.
Nadim, who are your top three World Cup favourites?
Four.
Come on.
I think the winner, realistically, is going to have to come out of England's group. So it's either going to be England or USA, probably. And then from there, I'm not sure. Everyone's looking at France. You're thinking maybe Argentina, given the fact it's Messi's possible last bit. Brazil, obviously, very good. But, you know, I'm looking forward to watching France, to watching Brazil, and to watching Argentina. But then there's going to be some sort of European force there. And the likelihood is, as you can see from the odds, because bookmakers always right.
Yeah.
It's going to be England after. It's going to be England, isn't it? England and France, yeah.
Wow. Brazil, France, Argentina. Jules, you happy with that?
Very happy with that.
Good. Well, yep, good. Right, final question.
Denmark looked good as well, didn't they?
They did look good.
They snuck into Xhaka's top 10, whatever it was.
His power something. Rankings, yeah. Look at you. Look at you. Finger on the pulse.
I'm not finger on the pulse. I was here. I had no choice.
Normally, you don't pay attention to any of those things.
That's right.
Final question. Dan, we need a Stevie update. How is he doing? Is he still shirtless?
He's not shirtless.
The picture, of course, he sent me. What did he do? He hurt his rotator cuff, didn't it? And the muscles separated. So he had to have an operation.
I'm only a man, right. I have to phrase this correctly.
Okay.
Not bad.
Right.
I can only imagine how much that man smells at the moment.
Oh my God.
I'm telling you.
He said, no, he told me.
If that man has showered since he had the operation, I would be shocked.
No, because I spoke to him yesterday and he said he had to go and see the consultant today, so he's going to have a shower.
Yeah.
A shower yesterday, I think, because he had to go out.
Sunday. So when do you have the op? Wednesday?
Yes. Maybe earlier.
Now, bear in mind, he's not winning any of the hygiene classes at the best of times. Right? He's not winning them. Bottom of the table, hygiene.
Yeah.
Down there. Right? He has to be.
Yeah. He says he's very bored. That's the update.
He never goes out the house anyway.
Oh, I don't know.
He's probably watching this. He'll be shouting at the TV. Hopefully his arm doesn't come out the slide. I can only imagine his missus walking by going, what's that smell, Stephen?
Oh, no.
Can you imagine poor him Eleanor. Not showering?
Oh, my goodness. That is it.
Bad's that going
to
be?
That brings us to the end. What a lovely thought to end on. Stevie's odour after 5 days. We will be back tomorrow for more, of course. Spain in action against Portugal.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate is to not search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/FC. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.